After two straight losses, is this time to worry for Suns fans or just a blip in the road? The NBA these days with absences galore. We'll talk about it. Locked On Suns, right here.
Network, your team every day.
We are back. This is Locked On Phoenix Suns. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and I'm your host, Brendan Kleen. Covering the Suns the past five seasons as a credentialed media member and a contributor at Suns.com and Dime Magazine. Thank you for making Locked On Suns your first listen every single day, helping to grow this YouTube channel little by little. We have crossed over the 700 threshold on subscribers, and we got to get to 750. Let's just do it by the end of the week. Let's knock it out in one fell swoop. This towel could be yours. We are the Valley from last year's playoffs. I will send it to you personally. I will pay for postage, the stamp, the address, whatever it takes to get it to one lucky subscriber once we get to 750. So get me there, please. You can also, of course, listen wherever you get your podcast. Subscribe there as well. Every little bit helps as we get closer to a new year of Suns basketball. So thank you all. And if you want to keep following along, it's at LockedOnPHXSuns on Twitter. Gonna work some mailbag questions in today, guys. So I like to kind of do this way with the mailbags. Thanks for constantly giving questions at the Suns subreddit as well as on Twitter. Again, that's at LockedOnPHXSuns. Always love to get your questions, and then this is always a fun way to incorporate them. Not just purely question, answer, but we'll work them in. We'll talk big picture stuff, but that's the main question. Are these Suns broken? Are they broken? No, it's not going to be that. Of course not. They are not broken. There's nothing disastrous going on, but since it's been basically two entire months since we saw two straight losses, despite a lot of injuries and absences throughout that, it doesn't necessarily explain it all away. It's time to at least look at that a little bit. And so I have three basic places that I want to go. The absence of DeAndre Ayton, or the poor play of DeAndre Ayton in these two games, Devin Booker's shooting, which I got a lot of questions from you guys about, and then just generally, again, the challenge of judging this Suns team right now, which is something I talked about last night in my recap of the Suns-Grizzlies game, and I want to hit on it again. So that's the layout, that's the lay of the land here. First question to that end comes from A. Jenkins on Reddit. He said, both the Christmas game and the Grizzlies loss have further solidified Ayton's value to the team, ironically through lack of touches in the former and lack of playing in the latter. What is the argument against getting Ayton more shots, and what are you seeing our team or other teams do that forces the offense away from Ayton when it's pretty clear he's got a favorable matchup? So what I'll say here is, first of all, I don't think he had a favorable matchup in either game. I mean, he didn't play in the Grizzlies game. He would not have had a favorable matchup, of course. Steven Adams was really tough for McGee, really tough for Jalen Smith, and would have been really tough for DeAndre Ayton to handle. But also in that first game, I actually think against the Warriors on Christmas Day, Kevon Looney played really well. And size-wise, obviously, a 6'11", 7-foot guy in Ayton is always going to, for the most part, have the size advantage, unless he's playing against, you know, Rudy Gobert or Adams or somebody like that. But Draymond Green, Kevon Looney, of course, Ayton is bigger than those guys. He scored his fair amount against both of them. But it was those other areas where he didn't necessarily excel. So we'll get to all of it. But I do agree generally. I mean, the point here has to be stated that the Suns, as currently constructed, need DeAndre Ayton. It's part of why Monty Williams is such a perfect fit here and that his system has worked so well here. It's a testament to Ayton fitting into it and Monty building it the right way. But with how much of the offense they run through the elbow, the sophisticated pick and roll stuff that the Suns like to do, that all needs Ayton to work. It needs a center, a very high-level center to work. And then probably most importantly, defensively, they don't play very big. I mean, James Jones has put together a small roster. They have a 5'11", 5'10 point guard. They have a 6'6 power forward in their starting lineup. So Ayton being there at the rim at all times, patient and using his length and athleticism to deter shots at the basket and not foul and all that is huge. It's part of, I mean, it's probably the biggest reason why their defense is the way that it is, and that it's been so elite and high level for the past two seasons. So again, the Suns need Ayton the way that they are currently constructed. It's not to say that there's no version of the Suns that might not need Ayton quite as bad, or that they can't win without him playing incredibly well. But I think it's obvious that the way this roster looks and the way this team plays, to beat the best teams four times out of seven in the playoffs, they're going to need Ayton to be at his best. That is almost impossible to argue because we've seen it. We've seen it in action, both on the winning side with Ayton playing well and being part of that recipe, and when he doesn't play well or a team is able to, you know, outmatch him, then the Suns tend to lose. So it's pretty obvious to anybody who's watched that that's true, but it is a little bit more complicated than that, and that's to your point here, because these games were on polar ends of the spectrum, and yet both of them kind of showed why it's so important for Ayton to play really well and the ways in which he needs to play really well. With Memphis, obviously, they're huge, you know, and so you need Ayton, you want Ayton out there to match the size, the energy of the big men on the Grizzlies. And then Golden State plays very small, so you want Ayton to be out there to attack those mismatches, to rebound, control possessions, end possessions on the defensive end and all of that stuff, which he just didn't do. He only had seven rebounds in that game, and that's probably the single biggest miss that he had here. But if you look a little bit closer too, statistically, the Suns' defense has actually been worse this season when Ayton has been on the floor, and overall, a lot of lineups have been. Ayton has been a negative for this team, which is very surprising and doesn't back up what I think we all see and what I just described, and that's something that can be hard to wrap our heads around sometimes, and it's not the whole answer by any means. The numbers are not the entirety of what you use, but it is a nice balance to look at. The defense, again, almost 6 points worse per 100 possessions, allowing nearly six more points per 100 possessions when Ayton is out there than when he's on the bench. And that's a lot because all bench lineups for the Suns have been pretty good. And then the starters plus a different center, whether that be Frank Kaminsky or JaVale McGee, have been excellent. Those are two of the three best lineups for this team on the season. Now, the Ayton lineup, the regular starting lineup, has also been very good, but those other lineups with bench guys on have been even better, which is what actually gets you to the negative, especially on the defensive end, for Ayton's minutes. And again, it doesn't really add up. It doesn't necessarily add up when you watch him. You know how important he is to the defense. Obviously, in a key defensive possession, you would think, all things equal, the Suns would want Ayton out there, and he will be when push comes to shove in most every situation come playoff time, yet the numbers spell the opposite. So with all of that said, Ayton has always had the most riding on him on this team. I mean, I think that's obvious. These games did not introduce us to that concept. The Suns are built to need him. They are built in a way where he has to be there for them to be at their best when he's inactive, when he doesn't play at the elite level that he's expected to. Then they're not as good of a team. That's true of any good player. I mean, that's true of any core player on any team in the whole league. If you don't have them, you're going to be worse, or you're going to have to make pretty big adjustments to the way that you play. But I will never give in on this. Feeding him, going to him, all these things that I constantly see in my mentions every time the Suns play a game and he, you know, has a hot half or a hot quarter and then doesn't end up getting the ball again, it's not what's going to solve the problem. This offense does not feed anybody, not even Booker, not just Ayton. It doesn't feed anybody. It doesn't run solely through any one player. It's just that Booker, Chris Paul, and Cameron Payne have the freedom to go off script because they can create shots for themselves and their teammates at a good level, and the team needs them to do that because they have earned that trust. If Ayton was polished enough to go off script and to have it work, be a shot creator, then Monty would run offense through him as a post guy, as a face-up guy. But just like Mikal Bridges or Landry Shamet or Frank Kaminsky, Ayton just has not earned that. Despite some upside as a playmaker, he's in that group right now, in the maybe group or the probably not group, in terms of who could one day have the offense run through them. We just have not seen that. The coaching staff has not seen that. And it's just a reality right now. So unless Ayton improves dramatically, they are not going to run offense through him because they don't run offense through just about anybody. And he's not proven himself to become part of the group that does get to run offense. That's just a fact. So the defense, he has to be out there for it to be at its best, no matter what the numbers say. Offensively, there is an obvious role for him to impact the game, affect winning, be a huge part of this group and the success that it could have. Even though we have seen moments where McGee and Kaminsky have maybe done a little more in that regard, but these games don't change anything for me. They reinforce stuff we already knew. They give us the sort of proof of concept to actually see it happen, but they don't change anything. So we'll see. I'm optimistic that he can keep flashing some of the stuff that has made him look more intriguing this season. He's added some stuff to his game, and you know, the next 50 games or so will be about making it more consistent and important and impactful and actually earning the trust to do some of it more consistently in games. We'll see, but unless something dramatic happens, it's going to be the same role for Ayton. And unfortunately, A. Jenkins, I don't necessarily feel like it's the opposing defense doing anything. I think it's just not in the cards for him to be a focal point on offense. Devin Booker is shooting a career best from three-point land and has had a magical season, a really renaissance type of season, going back to kind of the old guy mixed with the new guy. We'll talk about all of it in just a second. First, though, a quick word from Truebill. The life-saving? I don't know. Money-saving, for sure, service that cuts out the greedy corporations trying to steal your money basically right out of your pocket. Truebill is a new app that helps you identify and stop paying for subscriptions that you don't need, want, or simply forgot about. On average, it saves people up to $720 per year. Truebill makes it incredibly simple to cancel the subscriptions that you don't want. Just link your accounts, and Truebill will cancel those unwanted subscriptions with just one tap. And your Truebill concierge will be there when you need them to cancel maybe some of those that you just don't even realize you have while you're not even paying attention. It'll say, hey, you've been getting this email for a while. Do you actually use this? You want to cancel this one? And you can go ahead and say, yes, absolutely. Thank you, Truebill. And you will save that money without even knowing it. So don't fall for subscription scams. Start canceling today at Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. Go right now. That's Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. Booker's season has been in many ways similar to last year. When you look at the box score, when you look at the impact, when you look at the winning. But the one real way where it's clearly different is that Devin Booker is shooting better from three. So I got a couple questions on this. One is from DecoratorStorm2, that's at DecoratorStorm3. I'm sorry that your at name was taken, I think, on that decorator. But he said, Devin Booker shooting 42% from three this season. What do you think is the reason for the jump in percentage? Is it just flow of the offense, or is D-Book just hitting the shots he needs to when he's able? We also got a question on Reddit from Yosemite Hills. What are your expectations for Booker's three-point shooting the rest of the season? Will it be the three-point equivalent to the season where it felt like he only missed free throws that one game against the Rockets? I actually don't even remember that game, but I know what season you're talking about because you told me. I don't think he'll shoot 92% from the three-point line, but I get your question, which is he just has felt automatic all year. So long story short, I mean, the nuts and bolts of this is I think it's sustainable for sure. And I think that for a couple of reasons. One is I never thought it was anything like mechanical. You watch the guy shoot and it's pretty, it's beautiful. And you watch games like, you know, game six against the Lakers in the first round last year, and it's pretty obvious that he can make those shots when his mind is to it. He has great efficiency and accuracy from everywhere else on the court. So the idea that he was some bad three-point shooter for some reason just never really added up. So I don't think that I ever was too worried that we wouldn't see an improvement from him. But I do think the fact that it's been so extreme is what's exciting and what's worth digging into. So it is sustainable, but let's just kind of talk about how how much better it could get. So digging into the numbers a little bit, because there's obviously two types of three-point shot, right? There is catch and shoot, which is Chris Paul or DeAndre Ayton setting up a shot for him, Cameron Payne maybe, and Booker just catching, shooting the ball, and you know, he makes it or he doesn't. Then there's pull-up shots, which are obviously more difficult. They tend, for Booker at least, to come either in the pick and roll or in transition. He likes to take those. And so in the past, even in the past couple of seasons when Booker has not necessarily hit his threes at an elite clip, the catch and shoot have always been there. It's been the pull-ups where he's really struggled. And sometimes it's because before Ricky Rubio was here, it was because he was taking too many pull-up threes, and that's just a really tough shot. So when you take some bad, hard threes in that spot, it's just never going to be a good recipe for you. Or he just was missing them for one reason or another. I think you could obviously make the case that he's just improved at that over the course of his career. And this season, he's taken basically an equal number. I think it was like 79 in one category, 78 total in the other category, and he's shooting over 40% on both. So he's at 43% on catch and shoots and 41% on pull-ups. So he's making whatever he's taking. And that's the obvious way to be successful. You don't miss any type of three, then your overall efficiency is going to benefit. There's also the matter of how and where he's taking those shots. And I think that's benefiting him a little bit as well. So he's tied for the second highest three-point frequency. So just overall, it's a bigger part of his shot diet. So I think you can obviously say, you know, the comfort level is there. The green light and the willingness to take them is there. It's the second best three-point rate of his career as well. Just a total percentage of his shots. That comfort level is just clear. I mean, when you watch him, that hesitation is not there to the same degree. He might catch it and there's a closeout coming and he's just going to take it. Whereas in the past, maybe he lets the defender get there. He just had all sorts of kind of frustrating habits that made the inefficiency pull together. He's also taking more shots from the right and the left wing. Whereas if you look at his shot charts in the past, most of his career, really, a lot of it has been at the top of the key. Most of his threes have come from there because early on in his career, he was having the ball in his hands a lot. So the only threes he was going to get were, again, going to be pull-up threes. And the most common place for the pull-up three to happen is at the top of the key. But this season, the Suns have been running a little bit more side pick and roll. He is getting the ball off the catch more often with Chris Paul as those two continue to develop chemistry. So those shots are just shorter. I mean, it sounds fairly obvious, but those are easier shots. It's the same thing as getting corner threes. That's even better. You take more threes from places that are easier to make them, and you're going to make more. I mean, that should be how the math works, right? And then last but not least, just to measure sort of the willingness and the comfort again, I wanted to see like how many of his threes are really tightly guarded, because it feels like, again, when those closeouts are coming and we're not seeing quite the same amount of hesitation, that the best place you'd be able to notice that in the numbers is, well, he's taking them more often with a hand in his face. And that's mostly true. So he's taken 39 shots that NBA.com calls tightly guarded, which is when the defender is within 2 to 4 feet. So that basically that kind of closeout range. He's taken 39 total of those already this season. He only took 67 all of last season. And, you know, so he's on pace to eclipse that. And both of the efficiencies last season and this season are about 29%. So he's making the same proportion, which you would expect would be kind of low because it's a hard shot if the guy has his hand in your face. And he's taking more of them. That, again, to me, signifies that he just has more of that. He's just settled in with the fact that I'm going to go out there and I'm going to take these shots when they're there for me. And so I guess to answer your question, Yosemite, expectations for the three-point shooting, and then decorator, you said, is it just in the flow of the offense or is he just hitting more of them? I think the answer is yes to all of it. He's making more of the shots that he needs to make, 43% on those catch and shoot, but he's also taking and making more outside of the flow of the offense in those pull-up situations from all over the floor, and he's just making them. And at the end of the day, you just got to make those shots to increase your efficiency, and he is. Something I've been hitting on a lot on the pod lately is the difficulty of judging this Suns team, and I was glad to get a couple of questions about this because it's hard to always know what's going on with this group because of the injuries and the streak and COVID now and how they play and different guys going off at different times. It can be sort of confusing. One thing that's not confusing, though, is where you go when you have that hunch or you're just feeling it and you want to make a bet. Well, that's betonline.ag. BetOnline has you covered throughout the holiday season and into 2022 with more props, odds, and lines than ever before as football continues its march through the bowl season and the pro football playoff. BetOnline remains your number one spot no matter what sport you're betting on any time of year. Head to the website or use your mobile device, make an account today, and when you do, use the promo code LOCKEDON when you make your first deposit to receive a 50% welcome bonus. That's promo code LOCKEDON when you make your first deposit to get a 50% welcome bonus straight to your account. From basketball, football, even your favorite Vegas casino games, don't wait to take advantage of all of the amazing offers available throughout 2021 and into the new year. BetOnline remains the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. It's the new year, so that means New Year's resolutions. And if yours is about getting fit or eating healthier, make sure to include Built Bar in your plan. Built Bar is the protein bar that tastes just like a candy bar, or maybe even a little better. That would be my vote. They are, for the most part, going to taste a little better. Built Bar makes it easier to stick to your resolution because it tastes so good, you want to eat it. That's the difference here. Unlike other protein bars, which can be chalky, waxy, or taste like a chemical spill, Built Bar keeps you coming back. They are sweet. They are delicious. They are covered in chocolate. You want to eat healthy, but it can get boring. By like week three, you're thinking, it's just not worth it. You start to have that fix in you, a little bit of chocolate. You want something sweet. Built Bar has you covered. Most Built Bars are around 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, and packed with 17 grams of protein. Compare that to a candy bar, which is about 240 calories and 30 grams of sugar, and you get the idea. So here's an idea for the new year. Go to all of your secret treat stashes at home, the pantry, the office, the car. Throw out those candy bars, replace them with a Built Bar, and you will not regret it. To do all of this, to start the year off right, go to Built.com, use the promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your next order. That's promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at Built.com. Couple more thoughts for you, couple more questions to answer here on the pod today. Thank you for making Locked On Suns your first listen each and every day. So coming off of a couple of losses here, I am thinking about a lot of things. I mean, I think you guys are too. So Rye Guy, I'm just going to use your question here as a way to jump off. You know, you said on Reddit, what are your thoughts on the two consecutive losses? Do they worry you? Or do you think they're nothing to be concerned about? And I mean, it's a little bit of both. I mean, I think they expose some things about this team. I talked about Ayton. I talked about Booker and him continuing to play well for the most part has been a really promising sign that he's able to really get the scoring juice going when they need it. That has continued from the playoffs. We've seen a little bit of Olympic Book in terms of doing more, helping on defense, playmaking, doing the little things, playing with energy. I think I was looking back because I asked on Twitter your guys' takeaways from the Suns-Warriors game, and I got, 10 or so answers of all different shapes and sizes. And I think when you go through, and I was also going through the Reddit post-game threads, and when you're able to scroll through that and you see every single player mentioned and you see every explanation, but especially coaching and officiating, that's how you know that you lost to a team that just straight up outplayed you. And I think at the end of the day, that's what happened in these two games. You know, there were absences in both of them, so I won't ignore that. I'll obviously keep mentioning that, but I think against the Warriors on Christmas Day and against Memphis on Monday night, the Suns just got outplayed, and sometimes that happens. And I think the best way to know that, again, is when every answer comes up. There's not one thing to point to because there's not one reason they lost. They lost in most facets of the game, and that's how you lose a game. With all of that said, though, I said this on Monday, too. I think the Grizzlies are legit, and I might be more scared to play them than the Jazz in a second-round playoff series, honestly, truly. I also think the Warriors are the best team in the NBA. I think they are better than the Suns right now. I think they're better than the Bucks right now. And their defense is the biggest reason is the defense. And it's the single most dominant unit in the league. Go through any team in the league, go through their offense, their defense, find an area in the game of the game where they impact the most. And I guarantee you the Warriors defense is better. That's just the truth. And the Suns are going to have to go through them. But again, this team is hard to judge right now. Whether you look at the schedule, which obviously during the streak, we can all admit they were able to beat up on some bad teams, Houston a couple times, and they beat Oklahoma City last week, and they played the Kings a couple times, and they took advantage, they took care of business. But there's also Chris Paul taking a back seat, which makes everything harder to gauge. There's the style that the Suns play, which, as I was just talking about with Ayton, can make it hard for one player to always go off or always be a big, big factor offensively. And they've just had a lot of guys out. I mean, it has felt, you know, for the most part, they haven't missed a beat, but Nader's been out most of the season, it feels like now. Kaminsky has been out for quite a long time. Ayton has missed a few games. Booker had his absence. They've now had these COVID absences also. So it's the nature of the league this year, but it's also some specific things about how the Suns play. It just makes it hard to come down on one side or the other. I think there's going to be some things that they do during the playoffs that maybe take us off guard. I think their stars are going to really rise to the occasion as we saw last year. So until we get there, there's just some things we won't be able to accurately gauge. But I also think, back to the, I guess the, we're doing sort of the nervousness and the confidence, both sides of the spectrum here. I think they do have a few clear needs, and I think we can say that pretty definitively. We're almost halfway through the season now. A big forward, again, talking about the lack of size, the way they have to play defense, and you know, the lack of rim protection at times, the lack of just when they play a big team like the Grizzlies, or even the Warriors, who don't have a big center necessarily, but they have size at every spot. That's what they've always done with their team building. So it's like, yeah, you know, they might not be huge at the five, but they have, you know, a big, solid power forward in Draymond Green. They have Andre Iguodala, who can play the three or the four, and he has size. They have Gary Payton, who's physically imposing at the one and the two, and they have Kuminga, who's huge, and they have Jordan Poole, who has good size for the wing spot. So that's tough, and the big forward really do make a big difference in that spot. So would a wing defender. I mean, we've been talking about that for the whole season now. Nader wasn't really cutting it. You know, he's pretty solid on defense, but just not good enough on offense to stay on the floor. Torrey Craig's gone. And then last but not least, a shot creator. And coming off of that Warriors game, I probably would have said that's the number one need. And I think it probably still is, but you could say that about almost every single team in the NBA. And the reality is they're hard to find. Unless the Suns are going to get Harrison Barnes, I'm not sure they're going to get a guy who's going to be a huge difference maker in a postseason situation. I don't know if Eric Gordon is good enough. Thaddeus Young is not that guy. It's hard. It's hard to find. So they can still win without plugging those holes, but those are the needs. Big forward, shot creator, wing defender. And depending on the matchup, you know, one or the other of those is going to flare up. And it's just the nature of the beast. There's not a one dominant team in the NBA. You can poke holes in everybody. You can poke holes in the Suns. I guess the good thing is, despite how hard it is to gauge this team and the fact that they do have some needs, nobody knows this team better than the people in that building. And James Jones has the tools at his disposal to improve this roster. Monty Williams is going to keep tinkering. And they have 55% of the season, 60% of the season still to go ahead and fix it, you know, find solutions, change, adjust, roll with the punches, something that the Cardinals can't do. But that's not the podcast that I host. So I will not drive myself crazy, drive you any more crazy than I have to with that. Closing out the week, with a couple more shows here. I have a recap of the Thunder game on Wednesday night. I will not be there, but I will be watching at home, so I'll give you my thoughts Wednesday night after the buzzer, and then Thursday closing out the show. I'm hoping to get a guest. We'll see. I'm kind of playing it by ear until we know more about the Suns' COVID situation, but that's the blueprint for the rest of the week. Thanks for making Locked On Suns your first listen. I will see you tomorrow. Until then, enjoy the game.